content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include Durham leaders want Durham jobs to go to Durham residents, and NC awards contracts worth unprecedented $6 billion a year in privatization of Medicaid. And we'll begin with Durham leaders want Durham jobs to go to Durham residents. Durham's unemployment is low, but county leaders still want to make sure those already living here have their best shot at new jobs. The region has seen steady job growth in the last 5 years. Durham County's unemployment rate now is 3.3%. A couple of months ago, it was 2.8%. Both are lower than in about 20 years, said Paul Grantham, the chair of the Durham Workforce Development Board. Andre Pettigrew, director of the city's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, said they are focusing on helping those just getting out of high school who are just as involved and who don't have enough training. The city will also increase its paid internships from 200 to 300 this summer, he said, and wants that number to reach 1,000. Pettigrew said they especially want to help young people find jobs that pay living wages in four areas: health and life sciences, construction, advanced manufacturing, information technology, and they'd like Durham jobs to go to Durham residents. In January, the county commissioners approved a $750,000 economic development incentive for biotechnology company Avexis, bringing 200 new jobs to Durham, said Commissioner Ellen Reckow. How do we get our residents into those jobs? Reckow asked. The private sector isn't providing enough paid internships, she added. The city and county have stepped up big time. But what can our private sector do in that regard, she asked. Grantham said they want to increase the workforce pool by creating a pipeline of Durham residents already interested in pursuing careers here starting in high school. Some county commissioners want to start even earlier. I hope you reach out to DPS, Durham Public Schools, and engage students as early as middle school, Reckow said. By the time they go to high school in ninth grade, a lot of them may have mentally checked out. We need to get them excited earlier. Commissioner James Hill said that while students need to be 16 to work, economic and workforce development could still reach out when they are younger. To really bring that interest, it's going to start in the last few years of elementary school and middle school, he said. I just implore you to really focus on the middle school kids. There seems to be a core of poverty in Durham that we have to break. We keep doing these same programs, keep saying we're doing the same things, and we don't seem to reach the people. The people we need to talk to, they are not in the room right now. We are going to have to go out and talk to the people, he said. Hill said they need to tell to students in 5th, 6th, and 7th grades that they can become an electrician or a plumber out of high school. And next, NC awards contracts worth unprecedented $6 billion a year in privatization of Medicaid. Five health insurance organizations were named Monday to share in contracts totaling $6 million a year to provide health care under a privatized state Medicaid program for low-income, disabled, and elderly residents that is set to start providing health care coverage in November. The announcement represents the biggest financial outlay in the history of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services and will change the way the Medicaid program has operated for decades. Instead of paying doctors and hospitals for work performed, the state will now pay independent insurers a flat monthly fee for each patient covered so that the organizations can share in the profits if they keep down cost, but will be financially responsible for any cost overruns. This managed care approach, already adopted by most other states, was mandated in North Carolina in 2015 by the state legislature in response to chronic budget overruns and alleged mismanagement. Still, the announcement frustrated some advocates for low-income residents. The state health department rejected a Medicaid contract application by the 12 biggest hospital networks in North Carolina, but handed out multi-billion-dollar contracts that will last 3 to 5 years to out-of-state bidders, including at least one insurer, Centene Corporation, with a controversial track record. I was very surprised that the hospital's bid was rejected and that two plans that have no real North Carolina experience and bad track records in other states were accepted instead, said Douglas C., senior attorney at the Charlotte Center for Legal Advocacy, in an email. The contract winners for statewide Medicaid services are AmeriHealth, Caritas, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, United Healthcare, and WellCare. There is also one regional insurer, Carolina Complete Health, a consortium of the North Carolina Medical Society, NC Community Health Center Association, and Insurer Centene Corporation. It will operate regionally in two of the areas slated for the Phase 2 rollout in February. C was particularly concerned that Missouri-based Centene and New Jersey-based AmeriHealth were chosen. Centene is the nation's largest provider of health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. The Fortune 500 corporation and its subsidiaries have faced charges and sanctions in more than a dozen states, resulting in at least $23.6 million in penalties, according to an investigation by the Des Moines Register. The News and Observer wasn't able to reach Centene spokeswoman Marcella Manjarez-Hahn by email for comment. Brendan Riley, a policy analyst with the NC Justice Center in Raleigh, said the applications for the contracts were not publicly released, so it has been difficult to assess how North Carolina residents will fare under privatized Medicaid, the majority of whose beneficiaries are low-income children and minors under age 18. Some of the old concerns remain, Riley said. We'll take a really close look at the track record of some of these plans in other states. We hope the health department will effectively oversee and hold accountable these organizations to do a good job. The new version of Medicaid will be rolled out in phases, with the triangle being in the first wave, DHHS said Monday. Wake, Durham, Johnston, Chatham, and Orange counties are part of a 14-county region with 300,000 Medicaid beneficiaries, where privatized Medicaid will be tested before a statewide rollout in February. The other test region includes 13 counties in western North Carolina with 265,000 Medicaid beneficiaries. Most people covered by Medicaid will be able to keep their doctors and to choose any of the five new Medicaid private insurance options in which their doctor participates. Dave Richard, the state's deputy secretary for Medicaid, said in a conference call Monday, doctors can participate with all the Medicaid contractors in their area, with only some, or they can drop out. The vast majority of beneficiaries will continue to go to their provider, Richard said. Some providers may choose to move out of Medicaid because of this transition, and some may choose to come in. DHHS Secretary Mandy Cohen said Monday's announcement clears the way for the five insurer groups to set amounts they will pay doctors and hospitals for treating Medicaid patients. The new system is designed to foster competition so that each of the five Medicaid contract winners will try to develop the most comprehensive provider networks they can assemble in order to bring in as many patients as possible. Starting today, Cohen said in a conference call with reporters, folks are going to reach out to doctors and hospitals to do contract negotiations. Three applicants for the Medicaid contract were not accepted, and Cohen said they could appeal and have 30 days to do so. They are national health insurers Aetna and Optima Health, as well as MyHealth by Health Providers, a consortium of Presbyterian Health Care Services in New Mexico, and 12 North Carolina health care systems, including UNC Healthcare in Chapel Hill, Duke University Health System in Durham, and WakeMed Health and Hospitals in Raleigh. MyHealth spokeswoman Kathy Rothy could not be reached for comment by phone and email. The privatized version of Medicaid will mean big changes for 1.6 million of the 2.1 million people on the federal program. In June, Medicaid residents in the two test regions, including the Triangle, will receive information on which insurers are providing Medicaid health coverage in their areas so that they or their parents or guardians can pick the right insurance plan in July that includes their regular doctors. Their coverage will begin in November. Cohen assured the public that the new payment system, under which insurers will be on the hook for cost overruns, will not incentivize private Medicaid contractors to skimp on medical services in a strategy to staunch losses or boost profits. She said that the Medicaid contracts impose a strict quality measure and other standards upon the organizations receiving the Medicaid funds. For example, a provision called the medical loss ratio requires that 88% of the state Medicaid funds be spent on medical services and only 12% can be spent on administrative functions. But Monday's announcement did not appease those who advocate for Medicaid beneficiaries. No one has done Medicaid managed care in North Carolina before, said Corey Dunn, Director of Public Policy at Disability Rights North Carolina, in a phone interview. There's an inherent tension between wanting folks who know the state and folks who know managed care. About 500,000 Medicaid beneficiaries in North Carolina are considered medically complex patients and are among the most expensive to treat. They will remain on the traditional Medicaid program in which the state government pays doctors and hospitals for services provided, a system known as fee-for-service, regardless of cost. These patients have mental illness, developmental disabilities, or substance abuse problems, and they won't become part of the privatized Medicaid for several years until the new system is better understood. And next, this Raleigh native's growing startup takes on payday lenders. It's been less than a year since Raleigh native and former NC State University student Quentin Farmer's startup opened an office in Raleigh, but the California-based finance technology company has grown quickly here. Even, which helps users monitor their financial health by tracking spending, had 3 employees in a co-working space on Fayetteville Street in August. The company now has its own digs at 111 East Hargett Street and has hired 21 employees with positions still needing to be filled. It's been much faster growth than we could have hoped for, said Farmer, the company's chief operating officer, in an interview. The company's other office in Oakland, California, which is mainly made up of software engineers, has grown to around 50 employees, he added. It is the company's relationship with Walmart that has fueled its rise in the past year. More than 200,000 Walmart employees in the United States have used Even's app to manage their finances. Bloomberg reported this last year. The app connects with your bank account to track spending and give you a real-time ability to see how much money you can spend versus your expenses, like a car payment or an electricity bill. When used in arrangement with a business, the app can also allow employees to take a portion of their paycheck early, which allows workers to avoid going to payday lenders. Many of the new jobs in Raleigh are focused around sales and handling relationships with clients. We anticipate we will be here in the Hargett Street space for over a year before we might need more space, Farmer said. We are continuing to grow here, and where that stops, I'm not sure. It will be driven by demand. Farmer said his familiarity with Raleigh, its cost of living, and access to talent were behind the decision to open an office here. The 5-year-old company, which Farmer co-founded with CEO John Schlossberg, has been fueled by $40 million in venture capital funding and high-profile corporate partnerships with companies like Walmart and Kronos. Bull City Venture Partners in Durham is one of its many investors. Farmer said that eliminating the need for payday lending, which many people turn to when they have an unexpectedly high bill, is a goal of the company. The payday loan industry has received criticism for charging steep interest rates on their loans to primarily lower-income individuals. Even doesn't charge fees or interest on the money employees receive early. The function is called InstaPay. Instead, it charges an $8 monthly subscription, which some companies subsidize for their workers. That makes Even a little bit different from its competitors, whose similar services often make customers use a debit card issued by their employer rather than their own bank account. InstaPay is treated as a payroll deduction, a spokeswoman for Even said, meaning it is usually deducted from an employee's paycheck by way of an employer's payroll system. Users can only access up to 50% of their net pay before payday and only once per paycheck so that no one can get a full paycheck ahead of schedule. What we saw was that essentially the math of being a middle-class American was getting harder, Farmer said. Expenses were going up and wages were staying the same. From our point of view, using software to alleviate that strain was one thing that should exist and something as a team felt well-positioned to do. Even's internal data has shown that around 28% of its users had taken out a payday loan in the months before starting its service, compared to less than 20% 4 months after signing up for Even. The Associated Press reported this last year. By giving users a way to manage their finances more efficiently, they can begin to save or pay off existing debts instead, Farmer said. Going forward, Farmer said he expects the company to keep building new services within its app, as well as continuing to hire both here and in California. He added that his goal is to split his time evenly between Oakland and his hometown, but so far he has found himself on the road traveling to visit potential corporate clients more often. And next, tax breaks could drive new development in Durham. Could they also worsen gentrification? Developers have a new reason to build in already booming Durham. A new federal incentive will encourage investors in certain parts of the city, including East Durham, west of Duke University, and in southwest Durham. But the opportunity zones could also lead to private investors tearing down existing houses to build big new houses and getting tax breaks on their returns, Durham County Commissioner James Hill said Monday. This is why this has been called the Kushner Bill, he said, referring to Jared Kushner, President Donald Trump's senior advisor and son-in-law. So you drive gentrification. Is that your point? Asked Commissioner Heidi Carter. Seems like it would drive up the cost of rent. Durham's growth, with about 20 people moving here every day, has led to a housing crisis. One way local leaders have responded to gentrification and housing pressure is to commit to building affordable housing on publicly owned property downtown. Being in an opportunity zone may help one of those projects get built. Durham has 7 opportunity zones, which are in or next to low-income census tracts. Most are clustered in East Durham and include the 500 block of East Main Street, where the county plans to turn a parking lot into a parking garage and affordable housing. Once you select a developer, they will go out courting OZ, Opportunity Zone, investors right away. Sarah Odeo of the UNC School of Government Development Finance Initiative told the commissioners Monday. The initiative is helping the county plan for development on the 500 block. The 300 block of East Main Street, which the commissioners also voted to turn into affordable housing units and a parking garage, is not in an opportunity zone. The zones were created through the 2017 Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. They started in 2018 and are now in all 50 states. North Carolina has 252 zones. The North Carolina Department of Commerce says the state's Opportunity Zones program is designed to spur job growth, housing, and other investments. The program reduces and defers federal capital gains tax liability on reinvestment of gains into Opportunity Zones, Odeo explained. But projects have to be investment ready, Odeo said. If Durham leaders have an idea for a project, they need to get moving on making it a reality. Projects have to make a substantial improvement on the property, she said. Odeo cautioned that the Opportunity Zone program does not make a project cheaper. It just opens a door to capital. If a public-private partnership was needed before the OZ designation, it is still needed after the OZ designation, she said. This project is not a magic bullet in the way it is structured. The designation by itself is not a strategy. There's no guarantee it's not a vehicle to accelerating gentrification in an area already being gentrified, Odeo said. And what's next? County Manager Wendell Davis said the driver of the Opportunity Zones is more so the private sector than it is us. Still, some commissioners want to talk with their city council counterparts to see if they can jointly market Durham to the investors. They plan to talk with the city to go over exactly what properties are owned by the government in all the zones at their joint city-county planning committee meeting on March 12th. And next, Democrats push plan to increase Social Security benefits and boost solvency. After years of Republican-led debate on how to pare back Social Security's rising cost, Democrats are flipping the script with an ambitious plan to expand the New Deal-era social insurance program while making gradual changes to keep it solvent for the rest of the century. The Social Security 2100 Act, which was introduced this past week in the House and Senate, represents a sea change after decades dominated by concern that aging baby boomers would bankrupt the government as they begin drawing benefits from Social Security and other entitlement programs. It would be the first major expansion of Social Security since 1972 and the most significant change in the program since 1983, when Congress stepped in to avert a financial crisis by raising taxes and the eligibility age for Social Security. The bill would provide an across-the-board benefit increase equivalent to about 2% of the average Social Security benefit. It would raise the annual cost of living adjustment to reflect the fact that older Americans tend to use more of some services like health care. And it would increase the minimum benefit to ensure that workers with many years of low earnings do not retire into poverty. The bill would cut federal income taxes on Social Security benefits for about 12 million middle-income people while raising taxes elsewhere. The payroll tax rate would rise to 14.8% over the next 24 years from 12.4%, and the payroll tax would be imposed on earnings of more than $400,000 a year. The maximum amount of earnings subject to the Social Security payroll tax this year is $132,900. The proposal would, in effect, create a donut hole where earnings from $132,900 to $400,000 would not be taxed. Our bill, supported by more than 200 members of the House, would enhance and expand the nation's most successful insurance program, which touches the lives of every American, said Representative John Larson, a Democrat from Connecticut, the principal author of the legislation. We've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.